In this episode, Planetary Makeover presents Love, a Dynamic Force to Change the World. This is part one of a recorded live broadcast produced by our sister show, What in the World is Happening?
Welcome to another episode of What in the World is Happening, the show about Maitreya and the Masters of Wisdom. Welcome, everybody, and thank you for being here. Today's topic is Love, a Dynamic Force to Change the World. I'm Sabina Qureshi, broadcasting live from Edmonton, Canada. And with me today are Megan Shearer from Auckland, New Zealand. Hi, Megan.
Hello.
How are you?
Very good, thanks.
Glad to have you here. And Dick Larson, who's been here many times before, from Los Angeles, USA. Hi, Dick. How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And so now we're going to dive into this topic, which is fascinating. Love, a dynamic force to change the world. And we hope that you'll ask questions. We'll try to answer all of them.
The source for our information is the Ageless Wisdom Teachings. And that has been revealed by these four teachers in the last couple of centuries. The most recent being a man named Benjamin Creme from London. We all knew Benjamin Creme and actually studied under him. So we are students of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings. And it's that information that we want to add to the topic of love.
And one of the things that we always say when we talk about the Ageless Wisdom Teachings is that although for us they ring true and we find them extremely powerful and insightful, we don't want to try to convince you of anything. We're here to share our perspective, and we ask you just to consider it and see how it resonates, if it resonates for you. So on to the big question. What is love? We all talk about it. It's in all our songs, our art, our music, our philosophy. It's the topic, really. And it's very much related to what it means to be human. We all experience love of many types in many ways. But when we talk about love from the perspective of the Ageless Wisdom Teachings, in a way, what we are describing is something that actually goes far, far beyond our usual ideas of love. And so we'd like to dive in there and start with this perspective, which is really quite vast. The idea that it's a magnetic force, an actual power, physical power, which is, as this quote says, pulls together all of the building blocks of cosmos, literally. And so what we are told by the Ageless Wisdom Teachings is that this energy, love, binds the atoms of matter together and the units of humanity. That is, it's holding everything together, literally, not just in a figurative way. And according to this teaching, our galaxies, our solar system, all of it would disappear without love. Love is holding it all together. So in that sense, all of those songs are right. I mean, they're actually saying something very true that we feel intuitively. But according to this teaching, it's a literal truth at the atomic and subatomic level.
And those who have been in a loving relationship, now you know that love is the magnet that holds people together, families together, partner relationships together, and so on. It's a magnet, truly a magnetic energy.
I think even scientists would agree that at the basis of everything is energy. They might not agree at the moment that it's the energy of love, but nevertheless, that forms the very basis of all life. And so it's not such a big step, I think, from science to spirituality in that respect. At least I think one day they'll see eye to eye, even if at the moment they seem to be very different perspectives.
Well, you know, I remember in the 80s, a book came out called The Dancing Wooly Masters. Wooly, W-U hyphen L-I, which is some type of Buddhist term, which I don't remember what it means. But this book was a description of quantum physics in terms that we, the layman, could understand. And it related that level of physics, which talks about the very small, nano level, when we talk about atoms and really smaller particles than atoms, subatomic particles, and talked about all of this understanding that was growing at that time in terms of Zen Buddhism and the spiritual teachings from around the world. So there is really a growing awareness that what we're discovering in physics corresponds with the teachings of these great traditions.
Mm. Yeah, I think actually science and spirituality have been artificially separated, because really you need morals, ethics, spirituality, whatever you want to call it, behind science and technology. And at the moment, we don't have that. So we have a lot of unethical things going on that wouldn't happen if we had that spiritual understanding and understood these sort of concepts, like love being the basis of all life.
And so we go on to talk about this very, very basic teaching that our nature is love itself. And that we know this from the New Testament. This is what Jesus was teaching in Palestine 2,000 years ago. And this is something so incredible, if you contemplate it, to believe that, to actually think it's true, has such an impact on how you would experience yourself and others. And then the next part of it is that we are essentially God, the whatever you want to say about what God is, in terms of a source or a divine intelligence, a creative intelligence, and that God and love are one. Now, again, this is very similar to the Christian teaching, and I think you'll find it's present in all of the great traditions. And it's also something that more and more, for example, in the human potential movements or self-help, human development, this is more and more being affirmed and understood to be a powerful motivator and a powerful factor in how people can shift out of destructive ways of being towards themselves and towards others.
I think when it comes to religion, it was Jesus 2,000 years ago who introduced to humanity this whole concept of love, because I don't think before that we really understood what it is, and he demonstrated it in the way he lived his life. But 2,000 years later, we're still not really putting it into action, are we?
Yeah, it's a real struggle. It really is. Yeah. And this comes from one of Maitreya's messages. We will talk more about Maitreya a bit later in the program and explain who he is. And to go ahead now.
Maitreya is a senior member of our spiritual kingdom. And he's been releasing teachings through a couple of reporters internationally. And Benjamin Krem knows about that. And so we are aware of it as well. And we will be talking about Maitreya and some of his ideas as we go on. But one of them is that we have forgotten who we are. We've forgotten that we're divine. We've forgotten that we are love. We have forgotten that we're souls having a physical life, that we're not humans having a spiritual experience. We're spirits having a human experience. We've forgotten that. So we've stopped acting like that as much as we possibly could, if we were focused on it.
That's true. We've really lost our way in many ways, and there's a great gap between what we would wish the world was like, what it really is, and a lot of that is simply because of this very fact, and it applies to how we treat each other, how we treat all the other kingdoms in nature, all the other forms of life. And according to the Ageless Wisdom teaching, not only we are divine, but all life is divine, that there is nothing else than that. And so it's really, it would require a total shift in how we behave and how we structure our world to really live according to this. So it is a major change that's required.
I think you're right about how we've forgotten who we are, because if you look back at all the ancient civilizations and cultures, most of them lived in harmony with nature and harmony with each other. But because of the society we have nowadays, we seem to have lost touch with that in a spirituality. I think because we've been so focused on science and technology, we've disconnected from that very essential part of who we are.
Well, and perhaps the ways in which people were in harmony with nature previously was, I would want to say perhaps something like it was something that people inherited. That is, that they hadn't had to parse it out themselves intellectually. It was simply, this is how we've always done things. So it was instinctive, maybe. And it may have come from a time in which there was a real understanding. But if you look back over the last 2,000 years, I think that we're now starting to understand the world around us in ways that we haven't previously, that lead to being able to live in harmony. I'm not saying we couldn't live in harmony without understanding the world, but I think that it's also a new turn on the spiral in terms of our evolution and understanding of ourselves and the world, that we can begin to relate to the other forms of life in a way that we've never been able to before, precisely because of science.
Children haven't been brought up thinking of themselves as love or thinking of themselves as spiritual beings. And that's one of the things that will change as we understand it. Our information says that the educational system will start treating us like souls and educating us as souls in human bodies. And that will change the point of view of the children, and it will stick with them through their lives. So that's one of the good things that we can look forward to in the future, I think.
I think you're right.
I think what you're saying, Sabina, is right. It's like we're moving into a higher turn of the spiral, really, isn't it? Like mm-hmm. we're adding on to our previous understanding of who we are, the knowledge of science and what that has added to our lives. It's just a matter of making that work in such a way that it enriches people's lives, rather than at the moment where we have, you know, huge disparity between how people are living. Eventually I think it will work in harmony and we will have a much more whole and balanced society. So well, it doesn't have to be separative, in other words, science.
No, I don't think so, not at all. Yeah. excuse me. In terms of talking about love, for example, if you read about the type of understanding that scientists now have of how ecosystems work, how different species make the ecosystem around them a fertile or good place for other species, that all of them are necessary and they all play a role. This is something I don't think we ever understood before. We may have observed that, okay, there are these different types of animals in this area, but we didn't actually understand what each one was contributing to a larger kind of world around them. And now we have that understanding, and it keeps growing as more and more is discovered or understood, and down to the, you know, molecular level of how all of this fits together.
Let's reveal the stages of love.
All right.
I want to see this.
Okay. So do you want to talk about the first one, Dick?
Well, love of self. You if we know we are love, then we can love ourselves. Yes, we're human and we make mistakes, but love of self is critical, because if you don't recognize the love in you, you can't give it to others. You have nothing to give. And so love of self, it all starts there. It all starts there because we realize we have this huge well, this huge resource of love that we can give out to the world.
Yeah, I think we start off thinking we're the center of the universe, don't we? In fact, most of us are still at that point. But you've got to move beyond that. You know, as you evolve, you realize that other people around you are just as important and just as valuable as you are. And so you start your journey outwards and looking more and more at helping other people rather than just yourself.
So would you say that this love of self means that it's a way as though we were each of us was two people, one who's the one doing the loving and one who's the one receiving the loving? I mean, because it almost sounds like that when we talk about love of self.
Well, yes, it's about observing and knowing yourself. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think that's fascinating right there. It's just that. So the next one, love of partner or romantic love. And now I would have to qualify this and say not everybody may experience this in a lifetime, or not everybody may want to experience it for that matter. But that wouldn't mean that a person wasn't experiencing love or capable of it. This is just, we're calling this stages of love, but I think it's simply, in a way, like the way you started talking about it, Dick, that it's an expansion outward, right, from the self.
Absolutely. And romantic love, I think most people are familiar with. Even if they don't have a partner, they've been in love, you know, at some point. I mean, I first fell in love in sixth grade, so I learned about romantic love early. And romantic love is a real love, but it's not absolutely all there is to say about love.
Right.
Apparently it's a fairly recent development, like only the last maybe couple of hundred years, or perhaps more than that, but it's not something that we've always had in humanity's evolution.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then love of family. Well, of course, you know, most of us, I'm sure, love our family and care for them and want the best for them. And that's probably where most people are at, to be fair.
So now you can see how the love is starting to expand outward. Let's do the next one.
Okay.
Love of now here it expands again.
The wider group, beyond the family. And that could, you could even consider it love of country, some like a larger unit in a way.
Yes. Yeah.
So it could be, we've put the word country there, but it could be something like, I'm Scottish, I love all Scots people, or I'm a woman, I love all women, or it's some kind of grouping. So it doesn't have to be nation.
Doesn't
state.
Have to be country, right.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Or I'm a musician, I love all musicians, that type of thing. And now this one, well, I think this is a reach for most of us.
Yes, I agree. I agree. Love of all creation. It's something we can aspire to.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet, most of us. Some of the gurus that live on the planet right now are. But I think most of us are working towards that. I mean, different people love different parts. Some people have a special love for all the animals in the world and all the trees in the world, you know, in the oceans of the world and the creatures in the ocean. So I think we're slowly expanding to this, but it's a good thing to aspire to.
You might have the odd individual who has that sense of a love for all creation during a meditation, for example. So you might just have a very short instance of that sense of oneness. But yes, most vast majority of people would not have that feeling or even understand what that would be like.
Well, that's true. And I have to say that I've always found it very challenging, the idea of feeling love towards certain species like cockroaches, for example.
Yeah. Well, love isn't, this love, the love of all creation, I don't think is an emotional love.
No,
I think it's a heartfelt love. It's a soul love. It's a higher level love than just emotion. Men call it mental and spiritual if you want, but it's an awareness that all creation is sacred.
Right,
and I think it's that kind of love. It's an unemotional love.
Right, it's a love where you. You seek to value the life of that form.
Yes.
As an expression of the same thing you are, basically.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are used to love where you're very attached to someone. And so if that person goes, then you feel bereft, understandably. But as the spiritual teachers love, it's very detached. It's kind of hard to explain, I suppose, because we're not so used to that. But it's unconditional, of course. So no matter what we do, no matter what crimes we commit, no matter what we think or say, these teachers, these masters of wisdom, still love us. They love us throughout whatever we get up to.
Yeah, unconditional love is the love of the spiritual kingdom. And Jesus demonstrated it in his lifetime as unconditional love to give us something to, again, to give us an example to aspire to. We're not there yet because we all need to continue evolving. And as we do, our ability to love and our awareness of love will expand. And ultimately, when we become members of the spiritual kingdom permanently, we will be aware of unconditional love and able to do it. But right now, we're doing the best we can, you know.
Yeah. It shouldn't be too hard on ourselves.
That's right. That's a good
point,
Megan. We've
all got things to work on, and we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, our purpose in doing this isn't to make anybody feel bad or inadequate or anything. It's just to kind of show where we're headed if we continue to expand and evolve. And
I think it helps very much. I know it helps me to know that this is not our only life, that we have many, many lifetimes. So if you don't get it right this time, there's always next time.
Yeah, that's very comforting. And and I wanted to just describe an image that popped into my head when both of you were talking. Dick, earlier you held up a light bulb. You were showing how that helped your lighting for the camera. And I was thinking, well, unconditional love is similar to that in that the light bulb, once you turn it on, it emits light whether or not someone's there to be having the light shone on them. The light just continues to radiate forth. And I think that's probably the unconditional love image that works best for me, because the love is radiating out of you whether or not there's a recipient or any particular recipient there.
And whether or not somebody loves us. You know, right. The creation doesn't have to love us in order for us to love it. We don't need to. So unconditional love is giving love even though you're not getting it back, kind of thing. That's part of it too, I think. I think that's a good point, Sabina.
Yeah. And now we want to talk about degrees of love, words that help us to understand that love can be operating or functioning in many levels or degrees.
I love this part.
Yeah, so tolerance.
And tolerance.
That would simply be that it's like live and let live. And that actually is a level of love in the sense that you're exercising forbearance, or you're exercising the capacity to allow another to be whatever they are being or do whatever they're doing.
Yes, another good word for tolerance is acceptance.
Right.
You don't have to agree with it, but you accept it. You tolerate it. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one of the lowest forms of love. Yeah.
And then kind of a corollary of that, but maybe a slightly expanded level, would be harmlessness, in which you seek not to harm others.
I think that's a very difficult one for all of us to do, because we can unintentionally harm other people by something we say in a very clumsy manner, or, you know, even with the best of intentions, we can still inadvertently cause harm. But I guess at least if you have the intention of harmlessness, you're working towards that goal, then that's the main thing.
Yeah, I think turn the other cheek was a teaching about harmlessness. I don't think they literally meant, you know, let people beat you up or anything. But I think it was about trying to be as harmless as you can. You know, if you can't be kind to somebody, at least don't hurt them. You know, right. That kind of thing. I mean, just imagine if everybody in the world was harmless. Just harmless. Forget the rest of love. Just harmless. Man, it'd be a transformed world, wouldn't it?
My goodness.
So harmlessness is a very powerful, powerful goal to work towards. And each of us can work towards that.
Yeah.
Being less harmful.
Well, and this leads me to think about our systems, because right now we're thinking of love in terms of individual action.
Yes.
But we also are going to head towards, in this presentation, talking about our society's systems of how society operates politically, economically, socially, and that really all of those systems also either are or are not, or to different degrees, are expressing love or allowing the expression
not
of love.
Expressing love.
Yeah, not exactly. And so, yeah, cooperation would be another level, another degree of love. Go ahead, Megan.
I think we, even despite ourselves, we have to cooperate. For example, if you're driving a car, you know, you have to give way to someone else, you have to stop at the lights, you have to do all these cooperative actions in our everyday activities that we don't give a second thought to. And so I think we are learning, if not always, to be cooperative. But again, it's something that it's probably worth being conscious of, especially in these times. We're moving into a time where it's more important than ever that we work together rather than against each other. We can see what happens if you have one strong individual sort of holding sway, what damage that can cause. It's much more effective in any sphere of life if we have a whole group of people working together to solve problems.
And this is where we step from just talking about ourselves to talking about the group, to talking about others. Competition is the opposite of cooperation. And competition can create some very nasty results and feelings and so on. Whereas cooperation, now we're getting outside of ourselves and we're talking about more than one person working together, even as we tolerate them. So yes, cooperation is a huge step.
You were saying to look at the bigger picture, like
very
the effects
much
of our actions.
I agree.
And that leads to the next one that we've got on our list, goodwill, which, for example, what your example, Megan, about driving. When you're driving, you don't necessarily have to be consciously feeling goodwill towards the other drivers. You could just be at the level of tolerance, but you're certainly exercising, harmlessness. That's what you're trying to do. You don't want anyone to be hurt. You want everyone to be able to reach their destination. But goodwill would almost require another level of love, because here you're actually seeking good for others. You have the energy of love that's wanting to promote or create or assure or set up or protect the good for others.
It's becoming an active energy, isn't it, rather than just passive.
Yes, it is. You're wishing for the good. Your will is that others have good in their life, and then you act appropriately to that. So goodwill, I mean, the Christians sing about goodwill to men every Christmas, but we don't think about what we're singing. We're talking about the will for good to everyone. And that's goodwill. It's a very powerful force in the planet, on the planet, and we can each contribute to that by wishing well for others. Absolutely.
I would say that's probably one of the basic ideas behind religion, isn't it? That you wish goodwill for your fellow man, in whatever way you explain that or describe that. But it's a basic spiritual impulse that you want to care for each other, because actually doing that is good for you too. It works both ways.
Religion is not only about a relationship to God, but a relationship with others in your church, in your synagogue, in your temple. That congregational kind of feeling, that's what religion is about. It takes it from a one-on-one to a part of a group as well. So I couldn't agree more, Megan. Good point.
And then when we talk about the group or the other, compassion as another stage or degree of love, and this would be you want good for others, and in addition, you're able to have compassion for suffering or difficulty that the other is experiencing or going through. And so it's actually a way of walking in the footsteps of the other, empathizing, envisioning, or or imagining what it is to be that person, to live that life, to have that experience.
And we're going to talk later about this, but compassion is not just feeling good, feeling sorry for those who are less off, but doing something about it. Love is active. It's not passive. And we're going to talk more about that in a little while.
And then we have these words, brotherhood, sisterhood. Again, it's an idea of group, of feeling connected to others, and on a larger scale, much larger. In the past, people only used the word brotherhood. Now we also talk about sisterhood. But the idea being a shared sense of reality or I don't know what to call it exactly, but it's definitely about a shared sense. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Megan.
Yeah. We will, I think in this coming age, we will know as a fact that we are one. We are one humanity in more ways than one, not just because we're all on the same planet, but we all impact each other. We are, I always like to use this analogy like that we're cells in the one body. And so if there's disease in one part, that affects another part of the body. So it's very important that we care for each other, for the health of the overall body or of the world.
And you can see how these are building blocks. I mean, tolerance contributes to sisterhood. Harmlessness contributes to sisterhood. Cooperation contributes to sisterhood. Goodwill contributes to the feeling of and the awareness of sisterhood. And compassion creates an awareness of brotherhood and sisterhood of all people on the planet. So these degrees of love build upon each other and are some specific thoughts that we wanted to plant for you to consider about expanding our definition of love.
Then the last one on this list, reactive versus unconditional love, this is simply to talk about or introduce what we were mentioning earlier, unconditional love, the idea that you are emanating love regardless of how the other has behaved or is behaving or who the other is. And the word reactive here simply means the kind of love which reacts or is only expressed based on what others are doing. So it's a reaction, really. Like, well, I love him when he does that, but not when he does this.
Very well said.
Yeah.
Whereas unconditional love is just out there.
Yeah.
For anyone who wants to take it, it's out there for the universe. You know, our thoughts are energy too, and they affect the universe around us. So unconditional love doesn't have to mean you have a conversation with a tree or a rabbit. You know, you just have unconditional love and they absorb it. That's how powerful love is as an energy.
I think to have unconditional love, you have to have this innate understanding that we're all divine, that we're all God at heart, because otherwise we just react to this personality and what they're saying or doing.
Beautiful.
So you need to get to understand the underlying divinity.
Yeah. Well, and now we're going to move into talking about the changes taking place. Oh, no, sorry, I'm skipping ahead. Yeah, sorry. We're still talking about love right now. And the fact that it's active and it transforms, it causes change. And I think we've all experienced that, right? The effect of love. We've been the recipients of love. We've seen how it affects and changes our very being and how we live.
Yeah. On a personal level, you can't be in a loving relationship very long unless you're willing to transform and change and adapt for the sake of that relationship. So love encourages you to transform yourself into a relationship that works. So I think a lot of us have experienced this active force of love and its transforming energy. Yeah.
I think even a very simple way, like if you're passing someone on the street and you smile at them, although it's difficult at the moment with our masks, I know, but just a simple smile can activate that sort of sense of love from the other person. It's amazingly how simple it is to get that response if you try.
I've seen that happen many times. Smile at someone and all of a sudden they wake up and they realize that I'm there and they smile back and, man, you can feel the connection. You can feel the energy. It's great.
That's true. Yeah. And these are quotations. This is from Benjamin Krem, whom we saw at the very beginning of the program, in a book called Maitreya's Mission, Volume 3. And these are very powerful words because they do describe the fact that love is an active force. And that if it's not active, it isn't actually love.
Yeah, I think that's probably an issue we all have, is that we've probably been brought up with all these wonderful spiritual ideals, but we haven't really necessarily understood that they're meant to be part of our life and that we act on those ideals. So they're just the things that sit up there in the ethers. It's being very much part of how we live our lives.
Love is much more than an idea or a thought. If it's real love, it will translate into action that's appropriate to love. Yep.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah. And so there are many, many ways to express love, to put it into action. And essentially, it's all about what you do, service to others, harmlessness, cooperation, sharing. All of the work that people are doing for social justice these days, that's love. That's love in action.
Absolutely. Service is love in action. Serving others is how we serve God.
I think even a politician can demonstrate love. I mean,
even a politician.
Politicians. But in every sphere of life, you can demonstrate love in whatever you're doing. So whether that's politics, economics.
Yes, and we certainly need more of that.
Yeah.
And I've just seen we have a question. I'll just read it out. You mentioned religion and groups, but religions separate themselves from those that they think oppose their beliefs. How do we transcend religious separatism?
Yeah. Well, it starts with you. You try not to hold religious separatism in your reality in life. All the religions, my understanding from the Ageless Wisdom, is that all the religions contributed to our information and our knowledge and our awareness of the spiritual universe in one way or another. They all do it, but you're right. The person who asked that question is absolutely right. Every religion is convinced they're the right way. They're the one and only. And that's the separation that's caused, that's really coming out in our world right now and in our society. And we're going to talk about that in a little bit, because we're going to talk about the sort of cleavage separating people and why that's going to help us and how it's going to help us. But I think it just starts individually by each person trying to reduce their prejudice against certain religions. And that's where it's got to start. And I think it starts also with justice in the world, social justice, religious justice, political justice, economic justice. I mean, it's all part of that lack of reducing that separation and starting to care for others harmlessly and cooperatively.
I think the thing is, if you go back to the original teacher that inspired the religion, they would not preach separativeness or exclusiveness. So it's something that's developed, unfortunately, with most religions, is that they have ended up being at loggerheads instead of recognizing that most of what they talk about is actually in common. The differences are in the minority. And I think in the coming age, religions will be reformed to an extent where they go back to being more inclusive.
May I add one more thing to the answer to that question? How do we go forward from here and reduce that? The good news is we have help.
Yeah.
We have help because some of the members of the spiritual kingdom are walking amongst us now and will become openly available to make suggestions. And we're going to talk more about that as we go along. But the good news is we don't have to do it all ourselves. We are going to have help. And that's really the heart of our message about love and love in action.
Yeah. Another thing to just keep in mind, too, is that in terms of of this religious separatism. If you think of, if people within religions could see those in the other groups or other religions as having the same right they have to make choices and to choose their beliefs and to practice those beliefs, then that at a very basic level also could reduce this sense of separation, because you'd realize, well, that other person's like myself. They also have the same right I have. We all have these rights. But that's that goes back to what you were saying, Dick, about justice. And this is what you were starting to mention, Dick, about the help that we have. We're seeing these changes taking place in the world, and that this is a new dawn is something that these great beings, the masters of wisdom, they see it that way. And I think many of us do too. We're seeing a gradual transformation of society and its structures. People are addressing issues that are systemic and that have been in place for a long time. But now, for the first time, people are saying this cannot stay in this way. It has to change. And I think that's the big change that we're seeing. People are no longer accepting that these structures or these systems which deny justice or brotherhood, that's not acceptable, and people are working to change this.
I think it's good to emphasize that it will be a gradual change. I know a lot of people fear change, and of course we've had a lot happen in the last couple of years, for example, but when it comes to the transformation of society, it will be something that happens with agreement from all sides, and it will be step by step, and eventually we will have a much better world for everyone, but it'll be something that we're all participating in. You're not going to be left behind.
We're forced against, you know.
Yeah.
These changes are going to happen. You're not going to be forced to make changes. The changes will happen because we all see that they make sense, and we think that we should make those changes. And when some of them are happening now, if you sit back, if our audience sits back and looks at the world, they'll see that great changes are even happening now. And change causes stress, and change causes tension. And this is evident in our world right now, but it's a sign that good stuff is on the way, because change is taking place.
And why is all this change taking place? So this is also one of the things that we often refer to, and that is the change of age that we're going through right now, from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius. We've all heard of these names, Pisces and Aquarius, but what they actually are astronomical facts. That is, it refers to the motion in the heavens of our solar system that makes a great circle through space that takes an incredibly long time. I think it's, 25,000 years, something like that. And every age that we describe like this, the age of Pisces, the age of Aquarius, refers to a period of time in which our solar system is in alignment with a constellation. So
right.
we've been in alignment with the constellation of Pisces for the last 2,000 years, and we've been moving away from that alignment for the last 500 years or so, or 400. And now we've been, and simultaneously entering or coming closer and closer into alignment with the constellation of Aquarius. And each of these constellations, they're not inert. That is, just as we were talking earlier about how love is actually holding together the very atoms in cosmos, all the stars that radiate light are also, this light that they're radiating that we can perceive is also energy that has qualities which impact us. And so the stars in the constellation of Pisces, the energies that we were receiving stimulated our individuality, our idealism and devotion to an ideal. And now in Aquarius, these are different energies that we're receiving. It's a different constellation. And these energies are stimulating synthesis, the coming together of disparate parts to bring unity. And also the quality of making things real on the physical plane And that's something that we're seeing in the changes around us, is this desire for things to be concrete and real, not just an ideal.
These energies are very powerful. And you're right. This is not the astrology that's in the newspapers for entertainment. This is real astronomy. And astronomers call it the precession of the equinox. That's what they call the change of the ages. And so we've been in alignment the last 2,000 years with the great constellation Pisces, and we've been receiving tremendous energies from this constellation. And one of them is idealism. And it's the idealism, the ideal of freedom that saved the world in World War II. So the Piscean work has done its work. It's done its job. Man has stepped out of the herd now. We're individuals. Men and women around the world are individuals now. And now, starting in 1625, we started moving out of the influence of Pisces. And in 1675, we started moving into the influence of the new energies of Aquarius. Here's the problem. All the institutions that we have been built with Piscean energy: education, finance, government, politics, science, you name it. Every aspect of life was built, the structures were built with Piscean energy, and Piscean energy is being withdrawn now. So those structures are collapsing. No matter how much money we throw at education, we can't fix it. No matter how much money we throw at healthcare, we can't fix it, and so on. Well, the new energies of Aquarius, which include cooperation, working together, the strong individual is no longer going to make that much difference in the world. They don't know it yet, but they're not. It's going to be groups. Maitreya said it's the everyday people of the world that are going to determine how the world is from now on. And so we're right in the middle of that transition. And when you're in the middle of the transition, you have chaos. And that's exactly what we have on the planet now. But I'm convinced that we have been put here on life, in life, on the planet now, because we can handle it and we can make the changes that need to be changes. We need to recreate those structures with the energies of cooperation and synthesis, and then they'll work for the next 2,000 years and support a good life for humanity on the planet. And that's what we're going through now. We're going through this tremendous, this change, and the Aquarian energy is supporting people that work together. People marching in the streets are having a huge impact because Aquarian energy is supporting it. So this is a big time of change. It's a very important time.
Interestingly, apparently the new energies of Aquarius can only work through groups. So it actually disencourages one individual from holding sway and encourages groups to take action. And yes, it's wonderful to see all the protests, especially from the young people. I think really they are our future, of course, in many more ways than one, but they seem to tap in more readily to all these new energies and recognize innately our synthesis, that we are one. Whereas, for the older generation, it's not how we were brought up. So it's more difficult, generally speaking, for us to tap into that whole new energy and idea.
The older generations resist change, like you said. Mm. Whereas the young people, they see the need for change. They're ready to go. And they are going to help us transform the life on this planet. Absolutely.
Well, and even in the media, I just read an article that I thought very interesting, because it described how the contrast now in politics is between the quote unquote experts, or people who have these very expensive educations and have gone to elite universities, versus the common sense of the regular person. And what the commenter or the writer of the article was saying is that what we're seeing more and more now is that it's the common sense of the person on the street which is the wiser of these two.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. That's exactly what Maitreya said would happen. And it's happening. Yeah, this is a great time to be alive, you guys. We're going to see changes we never dreamed of. Hmm. Here we go, the age of Aquarius. So over the last 2,000 years, humanity, we've been expressing the knowledge aspect of God. Hmm. See, this all happens in stages. That's why science has expanded so much in the last century. I mean, we've gone from horse-drawn carriages to man walking on the moon in the blink of an eye. And, and science has developed so much over the last 50, 100 years. And that's the knowledge aspect of God that's been sent to us by the spiritual kingdom. And now we will express higher aspects of love. Here we go.
Yeah, this is the greater challenge now. Right.
The brotherhood of humanity, the brotherhood and sisterhood, that's the higher aspect that we're going to demonstrate now by working together and caring for each other more.
Hmm. Yes, it's hard to comprehend what the future will be like when we look at the present, but it'll be a golden civilization from what we've read anyway and understand. And I can well believe it. Once we put into action these wonderful ideals, there's no reason why we can't have like a garden of Eden on Earth, you know, just a beautiful paradise in which we can live.
But it will happen slowly, as you said.
It'll take a while.
The ageless wisdom says that one of God's great laws is the law of balance, the law of equilibrium. And it says that however bad it's been, that's how good it's going to get.
Mm.
So that gives you an idea. I mean, these are rough times for humanity. Thank goodness we're up to it and can survive it and prosper during it. But that horrible life that we've been seeing for the last 20 years, or 50 years, with all the world wars and so on, the last century, that's going to come out of the other end with really wonderful times that Megan was talking about. Where we will be filled with joy and able to express our joy and our love to each other. We'll take better care of each other, and the major structures of the world will adapt. We will adapt them. See, nobody can wave a magic wand and make this happen. We have to do the work.
That's the thing,
but,
isn't it?
But we will do it. That's the good news.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are rather passive and they expect some great teacher to wave their magic wand or whatever you want to call it and solve everything for us. But we don't seem to realize it's our responsibility. It's like a teenager with a messy room. You know, you have to clean it up. You can't expect someone else to do it for you. And for example, with the environment, what a mess we've made of the environment. We need to take action en masse to heal Mother Earth.
And the reason we do is because of the other great law of God, which is the law of action and reaction. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. It's also called the law of cause and effect. In the East, they call it the law of karma. Same thing. We created the mess. We have to clean it up. It's our responsibility to do that. I don't mean that you in the audience actually made the mess of the world. I mean that humanity did. And humanity needs to clean it up. So we have to do it. We have to do the work.
It's a collective.
And that's how we learn and grow as well. You know, if we were just passive and everything was done for us, how would we evolve? So we have to go through this experience ourselves.
And so here we have another quote from Benjamin Krem's master about how to do this, in fact. And it's true. We have to have new skills, new ways of thinking. Everything has to be adapted to what the needs of the moment are, what we actually are facing. And these new energies of Aquarius give us this possibility. Because in fact, as you were saying earlier, Megan, you cannot avail yourselves of these energies unless you do it in groups. So it's a completely different way of functioning. And in fact, the three of us, when we were putting together this program, we realized that when we were working in time together, that's when all the ideas flowed.
Stay tuned for part two of Love, a Dynamic Force to Change the World. To see the full video on YouTube and others like it, visit the What in the World is Happening YouTube channel. That is found at youtube.com/whatintheworldishappeningnow/streams. For more information, visit the Share International Canada Facebook page.